Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kelly, your host. Chris Check here with us in the studio, president of Catholic Answers. Thank you for coming back, Chris.
Cy, thanks for keep having me back against your better judgment.
I know. We bring it up at the meetings, but you just keep winning the vote by like one.
Against your better judgment, against the listener surveys.
I know. All signs.
That's why the top result, dread.
yeah, right. Yeah. That's why we didn't send it to Patrick, because we knew what he would still quit having Chris on the show.
Yeah, right.
Too much banter.
And Joe Heschmeyer. Who from now on will be referred to as Shauna's second favorite apologist, even though she did not say that.
She said top two, which, you know, if you're the number one, they don't tell you top two.
That's right. If you're number one, nobody says you're in my top two.
Right.
That's right. Yeah.
That's like coming in second place in tennis.
I see that. I see.
Or what does Ricky Bobby say?
There's only two. If you ain't first, you're last.
Oh, I thought second place is the first loser was Ricky Bobby, but maybe you're right. If you ain't. Help us out on Facebook. Help us out. What does Ricky Bobby say? We need to know.
I don't even know who Ricky Bobby is.
It's a Will Ferrell movie. This is the difference in your tastes.
I
accept
creature.
That. Yeah. Thank you.
In tennis, love means nothing. Hmm.
This moment brought to you by Joe Heschmeyer. This moment of confusion and depression
silence,
brought to you by Joe Heschmeyer.
One of my gifts.
All right. Here's the way we do it. Well, first of all, this is the flannel panel. That's why we're all wearing flannel. And the way the flannel panel works is the flannel has nothing to do with it. It's just a costume. It's just part of the razzle dazzle that we present. But the heart of the matter is we talk about the news of the day from a Catholic perspective. And right now we're talking about a survey we did, a mid-year survey of our listeners. We asked them, and there's two ways we asked them. If they're members of – wait, now I'm saying this, but we did ask Society 315, right?
Maybe that's why I got it.
Yeah. So Society 315 and the Radio Club.
Maybe Radio Club didn't get it.
No, Radio Club definitely got it. But I'm trying to remember if I remembered to send it to Society. Sorry if you're in Society 315 if I didn't send it to you. So if you're in one of those two groups, we send you the survey mid-year and then end of year nowadays. And then you get to tell us what you think. We got a huge response on this one. Like, it was really quite gratifying that so many people just turned around and gave us their answers, and it gave us good material for the show. So we're on for the review of the previous year's story, or the last 6 months' stories. The next question that we asked was, what do you think is the most likely outcome of the German synodal way?
What are the choices? Like, they stay in the church, they don't stay in the church. We set up an inquisition.
The revival of Catholic life in Germany.
Okay.
A more open and Christ-like approach to Catholic life in Germany.
I'm impressed you managed to write these.
Damage to Catholic life in Germany. A schism of the Catholic Church. Which do you think our listeners thought synodal vague?
I think damage has already happened.
Yeah.
Damage to Catholic life is already underway.
Yeah.
More damage, worse damage. Schism is not outside of the realm of possibility here, my friends.
Are we going to do all CHs as just an H? We're going to be Christ-check.
Christ-check. I like it.
I don't know why it's pronounced schism instead of schism, but I will know before the next show why schism is correct and schism is less preferred.
Okay. It's from the Greek schisma. So there's an SK.
Well, I don't know what part of Greece you come from, but it's schisma in Greece. That's the way we say it there.
But I think I'm the only one, by the way, I know who says schism.
That's usually a good sign I'm pronouncing a word wrong.
In the building. I don't know anybody else who says schism.
I've got a lot of words that only I pronounce one
way. The only way to settle this, call Queen Elizabeth. How does she pronounce it?
Oh, for sure.
Oh, too soon? Sorry. My bad. My bad.
That story's not from the last 6 months.
No. When did the queen pass? That was last year, right? Yeah. Chris has no idea. Queen of what? what are we referring to? I didn't know Beyonce was dead. All right. Here's the what do you think is the most likely outcome of the German synodal way?
I think realistically, damage to the church. I don't know if I put in my vote. I think schism is a real possibility. But if I had to put bets on it, I would
word bet. For yep. word, that's what I said. I said schism is a possibility here. Yep.
Almost word for word.
Not syllable for syllable, but word for word. Yes.
Okay, fair enough.
All right, a revival of the Catholic life in Germany. 4.3%.
Who are these? No offense to you, 4.3%.
I know. 4 out of every 100 people that took our survey thought, yeah, that German synodal way, that's really going to revive things.
Were
in
these
Germany.
Also the people who said they felt dread about the Eucharistic reamazement?
Do we have any German bishops in our radio club? I don't know who these people are. All right. A more open and Christ-like approach to life in Germany. 6%.
Wow.
So 10% of our listeners. And this is a self-selecting group, the listeners of Catholic Answers. 10% thought, yeah, it's going pretty well there
in Germany.
I might
be giving them too much credit, but there's a sense in which the Protestant Reformation did lead to a huge outpouring of Catholic sanctity in response.
Oh, so you're saying that maybe our listeners are thinking, oh,
people are
going down to go up.
If they yeah. see, oh, yeah. hey, there's a real crisis in the church, people need to step up. Yeah. I know. Dioceses that experience real crises often have an outpouring of vocation. There does seem to be a sense in which where sin abounds, grace abounds all the more.
I would say it's more likely that 10% of our listeners have never heard of Germany or the Synodal Way. That this is a group that couldn't find Germany on a map.
Yeah, it is confusing because you've got the Synod on Synodality and you've got the Synodal Way. And so keeping those two distinct,
oh, that's
where
true.
One of them yeah. is actually potentially a very good thing, potentially. And the other one has been like already condemned by the church.
Okay, the winner on this one was an absolute statistical tie, a perfect statistical wow. tie to 2 decimal points. Damage to Catholic life in Germany, 44.79%. A schism of the Catholic Church, 44.79%, for a total of 90%, if you round properly, if 90% of our listeners thought this is not going well and it's not going to go well.
Wow. They're right.
Yeah. I have to say, I mean, it's a world church and all that, but I cannot fathom living in a church, like having a national church that thinks that the sexual revolution, like it's not like a fringe like we have in the United States, you know, the National Catholic Register. Excuse me,
reporter
types. I always do that backwards. The National
from Kansas City.
And God bless them. I'm not trying to badmouth the National Catholic Reporter. Sure. I'm just saying that they represent a minority in active American Catholics. How did we get a whole national church that thinks, hey, we're all in on the sexual revolution? We are all in on this.
I mean, there is a church tax. So whether you're a practicing Catholic or not, you're giving 3% of your money to the German bishops.
Right.
And so they don't need to be responsive to the movements of the Holy Spirit because they can respond to the movements of the German government. I mean, I that maybe is too cynical of a way, but I do think there's a real sense in which if they felt acutely that they were losing practicing tithing members, that would probably be a wake-up call. And I mean that without assuming the worst motives or anything like that. I think there's a sense in which Germany really favors a very academic clergy. And when you have bad academic strains, they can become enamored with the latest theological fads and heresies. So I think that's another kind of factor in this, where if they are a church that smells like the sheep and really knows, oh, hey, this thing we've been preaching seems to be driving practicing Catholics away.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. It seems like that's an important kind of check that we've lost in places like Germany.
You know, Joe, that's an interesting thing that you say, and it's testable to some degree or another, because Germany is not the only nation that has some form or another of a church
point.
Tax.
Like, right. Does Austria?
Well, I think of Canada, for example. The schools, in any case, are heavily subsidized by the state. By the way, I think there's, by the way, a social justice argument to be made in favor of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I support it.
Although, but Monica was telling us in Australia, the government pays for the Catholic schools,
yeah.
and it has not helped the Catholic schools.
No, I think in the modern period, or in the, by modern, I mean Renaissance forward here, I think there's too close an association between the king's coin and what the king is going to demand.
Yes.
And if the king is not a Christian prelate, which we don't have in any of these countries, you know, in a real
Queen
sense.
Elizabeth died.
Well, yeah, but even in praxis, I would say.
She's not the head of state in that way.
Yeah. Right. So I think that in the modern period, in effect, it's probably not a good idea.
Yeah. I think actually England's a good example. Last I saw, Anglicanism, the official religion of the country, was the third most practiced religion in the country after Catholicism and Islam.
Yeah.
Is that
true? Yeah. More people are going to mosque on Friday than church on Sunday.
Right.
Wow. The other thing about this that I think is something that bears reflection on the part of our listeners and the three of us is we're not inclined to think that things can be bad. Part of it's naivete. Some of it is optimism. Some of it is sort of cultivated optimism, but we're reluctant. I am. We're reluctant to admit that things can be socially, economically, politically, spiritually bad.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
And I think a little cold water and some honest assessment of what's going on in Germany, or in a different way, what went on in Mexico in the late 20s, or the persecution of the church in various African countries,
or Nicaragua
right now.
Nicaragua, which is a horror show.
Nicaragua, yes. where they just said, this was just a couple of days ago. They just said, we're shutting down this seminary because they're laundering money. Heavens, there was a little bit of like a micro loan program going on from
so they called it money laundering.
Yeah, and so they call it and they've seized the assets of this seminary.
Of course, just or like Henry VIII.
Sure. Or in Australia, our friend Monica DeMitt, who was here a week or so ago, telling us about a hospital that has just been taken by the government.
Yeah.
Now we've not felt the effects of this in the United States, and when we do, it tends to be multinational corporations or corporations like Guggenheim Baseball Management, for example, inviting in blasphemous and sacrilegious sideshow acts. But we are beginning to feel the constraints of government, and we need only look to these other parts of the world to see what is not outside the realm of possibility in the United States.
I think all of that's true. I think the parallel we'd see is not the direct government takeover. I'll give you an example.
Sure.
In Washington, D.C., they passed a law that required all adoption agencies to adopt to same-sex couples. And
to facilitate adoption
by same-sex couples.
Yeah. That happened in Chicago.
You can't go... Yeah. And so Catholic Charities there spun off and became Christian Charities. And the Catholic Adoption Agency in D.C. shut down. And Cardinal Worrell went to them ahead of time and said that was what was going to happen. And
they
one of the councilmen said, that's what we want.
Yeah.
Like, it was intentional. We can't just directly take you over, but we can make it so you literally can't do business.
Right. That's and what they then, tried to do with then, Grace here in San Diego.
And so then the government steps in and says, well, look, nobody was doing it. So now we need the government to get bigger and do it. It's pernicious and evil. It's a little less direct than what you would get in Nicaragua.
Well, let me ask you about this then. I would be interested to hear what the two of you think about it. In the United States, the movement is not towards getting the government to pay for Catholic schools. The movement is towards getting the government to give a voucher to the parents and they can choose a school.
That's actually what I was going to say. I think this is a good middleman to just have the money follow the student. Because right now there's insane stories about widespread educational corruption in public schools. And one of the examples, Baltimore was notorious for this, where they would round up truant kids by busloads and send them to school on the first days because government money was based on how many students
attendance on that day.
Right. And then after that, you were free to go because then they were getting thousands of dollars per student.
Right.
While that student was physically not even there. That's just theft. I mean, there's no way around that. When you're saying we're getting money for all these kids who we intentionally sent to school one day and we're not providing them even a modicum of education. We're not even in the same building as them. But then if you want to say not even in the same building, the number one predictor of whether a school stayed closed after the initial wave of COVID wasn't how bad the COVID rates were. It was how strong the teachers union was. Mm.
The teachers unions really hurt themselves.
And what I think happened
is parents
realized
how little. I'm sure there's good ones
and bad
ones, but man, they hurt themselves.
Right.
Yeah.
And so parents, I think, would like to have a school system more responsive. You've got all the COVID stuff, all of the controversy about that, followed by all these controversies over things like the books that are in the school libraries. And rather than having to have a top-down government solution of a book list, a ban list, whatever, the easiest way is to just put money in the hands of parents to say,
but will
send,
the, but,
send them to a sane school.
Yeah,
but, then,
by the way,
but then schools have to be certified by the government. And so will does the noose tighten eventually where they go, yeah, you can spend this at any school, but you can't spend it at a school that teaches that two men can't marry each other because that's bigotry. Do you see
what
I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, no, certainly. Is that certainly a risk. But that doesn't put us in any worse of a spot than we currently are in, which is right now we get $0.
Yeah, that's a good point.
A tuition tax credit is a better model.
Can you tell me on the other side of the break? Because I'm late for the break.
Oh, sure.
I apologize, Chris. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with the flannel panel on Catholic Answers Live.
Your questions, Catholic Answers Live. Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
The destination for great Catholic audio programming is EWTN Podcast Central, featuring the best of EWTN radio, as well as faith-filled podcasts from our friends and affiliates across the nation, all in one place, all free. If it's central to the faith, you can find it on EWTN Podcast Central. It's like podcast heaven. Visit EWTN.com/radio/podcasts today.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Flannel Panel. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Flannel Panel members, Joe Heschmeyer, apologist here at Catholic Answers and the author of this brand new, beautiful book, The Eucharist is Really Jesus, How Christ's Body and Blood Are the Key to Everything We Believe. By the way, it's on sale today at shop.catholic.com. You use a promo code Jesus33. Jesus33. I'm not sure about using the name of Jesus as a promo code, but I'm going to go with it. You get 33% off if you use that promo code at shop.catholic.com.
It does look a little bit like Jesus's username, which is a very strange kind of thing.
You know, the thing is there's probably...
Well, that would make sense.
I'm sure that is someone's username somewhere,
yes.
You know, because it's only...
Jesus.
I mean, in the Anglo world...
Maybe it's Jesus 33.
Yeah, maybe. Oh, let's say that. That sounds...
Jesus 33? Did I do that right? I don't know.
Yeah. Jesus 33. You were trying to do 33 in Spanish? Oh, this should be good.
I thought it was 33.
I'm getting the thumbs up from Edgar, who speaks slightly
better Spanish than I do.
Yeah.
Sí se puede.
Sí se puede. That's okay. You read that on a sign.
I don't know what these things mean. No. But I was going to say, you know, Jesus 33. Here's a good way to remember it. A little story. I already told one positive story about my wife. I also have another one. You were just saying how mean I am to my wife earlier. So this is...
I apologize that I said on the air how mean you are to your wife.
I do pick on my wife.
I should have covered for
but
you.
But this
on
is
how
her picking on me.
Yeah.
I got married to her at 33, and she gave me a beautiful painting called Christ at 33. And she explained it's because marriage is a little crucifixion.
And she's lived up to that. You've lived up to that.
That's I've lived up, yeah. Martyrdom on an installment.
All right, so the way we're doing flannel panel today, Chris Check, our other guest, of course, president of Catholic Answers.
Hey, Cy.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for being here. Here's another
happy.
One. This one goes, this is a future-looking one. We asked our listeners, over the next 10 years, what do you expect for the Catholic Church? It will experience revival and growth. It will get smaller and lose public stature. It will muddle through just as it has been, or none of these. What would be your answer? And then what do you think our listeners answered?
So it certainly is going to continue to contract. As a whole, and all this data is available. The guys who do a great job with it are our friends J.D. Flynn and Ed Condon. Although at the Pillar, although that they've got a data guy, I can't remember his name. He's great. But we're already seeing fewer baptisms, fewer funerals, fewer marriages.
Right.
So all of the statistics that point to faithful in the pews, there's no question the church is going to contract. We're also seeing parishes closing. New Haven, I think, has gone from not is going to go from 9 to 1 parish.
In Connecticut?
Wow. The city of New Haven. Yeah. That's in the diocese or archdiocese of Hartford, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and then we've seen parish consolidation or contraction in other parts of the country as well. Now, there will be places where there's going to continue to be quite exciting growth.
Yeah.
The Metroplex of Texas is going to be one of them. I think Charlotte.
Yes. Largest church in the country.
Largest church in the country, a superb seminary, a great rector there. Almost every fraternity of St. Peter or Institute of Christ the King parish
is going
to continue. Here's
my question about that. Is that growth for the church or is that just movement?
I think a lot of that's lateral movement.
Yeah, it's not really growth.
Oh, no.
That parish is growing.
Yes, it is lateral movement, but it's also church growth, the best kind.
Biological.
Yeah.
Making babies.
Camera, right?
Yeah.
So it's the best kind of church growth. And that's where it's taking place. And it's going to continue to happen at our friends, for example, whose canonical status isn't so well clarified with the Pius X Society. They just built the largest Catholic church in the state of Kansas. It's huge. And I don't know if any of you have been to St. Mary's, Kansas. I've been there. You've been, Joe.
I was there just a few weeks ago.
So you've seen it.
I did.
This place is huge. And by the way, beautiful.
Yeah, it is. It really is. It's a testament to the kind of beautiful church architecture that's still possible.
Yep, it sure is. I've been to St. Mary several times. My friend Jim Vogel lives there. And that's a little town. I don't know what the population of St. Mary's,
it's
Kansas is.
It's not large.
Is.
It's very...
30,000?
Yeah, it's a lot of Catholics, a lot of society folks, whoever you want to... Whatever.
They are Catholics.
Yeah, they're Catholics in an unusual relationship with the broader church.
Although their priests have faculties to hear confession, let's be clear about that. And if appointed by the local ordinary, they can...
Marry,
yeah.
Yeah, which I believe that delegation's been given.
But still being in Kansas. Just to be clear, though, being an explicit union with the Vicar of Christ is an important thing.
I'm in favor of it.
Yeah. I'm in favor. That's not a negligible loss.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, they name Pope Francis when they say Mass, and they name the local bishop when they offer Mass.
Well, it's good. They should just come into full communion with the church. That'll be really efficacious.
I think we are getting a little bit off the question of growth.
Very well. In any case, there are going to be places where there's going to be growth. And good and vibrant and enthusiastic and hopeful growth, but overall the contraction is coming. The contraction is coming, and the aging is coming.
Yeah, because we also have the baby bust coming. The baby boomers are starting to get to that stage where they pass on to eternal judgment, and there is not a similarly large demographic of babies coming up.
Yeah.
Leaving aside the Catholic question. Just in terms of American population, world population, and certainly in the West, there's a lot of weird demographic stuff happening. So that's going to be one of the things that areas where you used to be able to have a lot of Catholic churches, aside from the question of the generation practicing less than the prior generation, you also have the fact that there just are fewer people and they're living in new places. So there's going to be a lot of movement in terms of churches. And
except the number of Catholics in the United States has actually increased since the 70s.
Yeah.
Because of immigration.
Yes.
Because of immigration. So in that time, when we've gone from something like 50,000 to 70,000 or 50 million to 70 million Catholics or whatever it is, the drop in the number of Catholic marriages is
right. There's a drop in real terms.
Disproportionate to the increase, if I'm saying that correctly.
Yeah. It's not just that it's not keeping pace. You actually have a real decline.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so, even if there were the exact same. Yeah.
Right.
You should have.
Said it.
So right. Chris's thing is that the churches will continue to get smaller.
Your view is... Benedict's prediction was a smaller and purer church, meaning a smaller church, but the people who are in it are more aware of why they're Catholic and are more passionate about being Catholic.
Right.
I'm inclined towards that. And I would give this example. I knew someone who was a Catholic who had gone to seminary in the 1970s, and I was not born then. I knew him later in life. and his views were, to put it nicely, heterodox, but he still cared a lot about being Catholic. But he had such a strange idea about things like the resurrection that I remember thinking, if I believed what you believed, I wouldn't call myself a Christian. I wouldn't be a Catholic. And I think a lot of what you're seeing is that young people who believe there wasn't a real resurrection would no longer have the confusion in calling themselves atheist, agnostic.
Yeah, they just move out.
Right, right, right. And this is in some ways the perverse loss of Catholic culture, that the generation, like the baby boom generation, even if you lost the faith, you were so deeply formed by Catholicism that you still considered yourself Catholic. Without that, then the people who consider themselves Catholic would be those who really believe.
All right, so I'll come back and let you know what our listeners said was going to happen in the Catholic Church over the next 10 years. It's the final panel, Catholic Answers Live, right back. This year, the Catholic Answers Conference turns its attention to the question of God in an age of unbelief. Join us September 21st through 24th in San Diego for I Believe in God, featuring very special guest Scott Hahn and an all-star lineup of speakers. Spend 4 fun days with your favorite Catholic Answers apologists. Seats are still available, but going fast. Use promo code EARLY to save $50 and register today at CatholicAnswersConference.com.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word Podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
Want to know more about the origins of the Catholic Church? Joe Heschmeyer explores the beginnings of Christianity. In the early church was the Catholic Church. Joe digs deep into the words and actions of those who lived right after the apostles to refute anti-Catholic claims of how the faith was lived back then. Order your copy of The Early Church Was the Catholic Church today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
As Catholic apologetics have gotten stronger, Protestant responses have gotten stronger as well. And now they have their own answers to rebut the standard Catholic proofs. Don't fret, we've got you covered. In his new book, Meeting the Protestant Response, apologist Carlo Broussard gives well-reasoned biblical answers to Protestant comebacks. Order your copy of Meeting the Protestant Response today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Chris Check here with us. Joe Heschmeyer here with us. And it's the flannel panel where we talk about the news of the day from a Catholic perspective. And we polled twice a year now. We used to do it once a year, but I got excited. And now we do it twice a year. We poll our listeners, except for the ones whose first name starts with the letter P. Everybody else gets polled. And we ask them about what they think of the news of the day and what they think is coming down the pike and what they think of what just happened. And this one was, what do you think is the most likely outcome? No. What do you think over the next 10 years, what do you expect for a Catholic Church? And the answers were, it will experience revival and growth. It will get smaller and lose public stature. It will muddle through just as it has been, or none of these. None of these came in at 11%.
What were the options they were missing?
Maybe they thought explosive growth of okay. Unimaginable power. Maybe they thought Jesus will come back.
Second coming.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I would say, well, I don't know. It'll muddle through just as it has been. That was a little less than 25%, a little less than a quarter of our listeners thought that. It will get smaller and lose public stature, 30%. And it will experience revival and growth, 35%. Wow. Our listeners are nothing if not chipper.
Yeah, you know, I think if you want to turn that prediction into a reality, get to work.
Yep.
That's right. Yeah. And I'm sure, you know what?
Get married and have children.
That's one way.
Yep.
That is a deep investment in the formation. You can also just have conversations about God with strangers.
Yeah.
Go to the seminary.
A religious woman. We need about a million more women religious. You could be a man religious. We need about 900,000 more.
Where are those. You getting these numbers?
This is scientific calculations.
Okay. It's from the synod.
I've made.
It's the working document.
The synod.
All right. So I'm happy to hear that there's more than a third of our listeners think that the church is going to experience exciting revival and growth over the next 10 years.
I don't want to be mean to a third of our listeners. I don't share the excitement about that. And the reason I don't is because a lot of the decline of the church has been while we've trumpeted how well we're doing. And it's hard seeing the decline on the ground while we're like, things are going really well. And it's like, no. And the first way we can address the fact that things aren't going really well is to just to stop pretending and say things need to change and really dramatically. I don't mean like we need women priests. I mean like we need to rediscover our love for Jesus Christ.
I've been reading Larry Chapp's wonderful book, which I recommend. I really do recommend it. It's a lovely book called
a good chap.
He's a lovely chap. Confessions of a Catholic Worker. Confession of a Catholic Worker. And this is the central point that he makes. And he does it I told him, I said, you're a pugilistic writer. And he said, yeah, I am. Yeah. But he does it with such fisticuffs. You know, he makes the point. It's about radical connection to the person of Jesus Christ. And if you can do that and live out of that radical connection to the person of Jesus Christ, don't worry about anything else. Don't have any, you don't need another plan or program. It's not that you don't, you know, we don't need leaders and structures and all that, but it's just, that's the thing. That's the key thing. Yeah. Radical connection to the person of Jesus Christ, and a lot of problems work their way out.
Yeah. You know, there are a lot of Catholic writers who I agree with maybe 80% of what they say, but the ones that I really like are the ones who have that, where they get the Jesus part.
Yeah, right.
Because you can find writers, frankly, in all factions or sides within the church, who it's like, well, no, it just sounds like you're describing a program or a political agenda or a party. And it's like, where's Jesus?
Yeah.
Like, where's the actual Jesus?
That's the way I feel about most documents from the USCCB. We can get Jesus mentioned in here? Any chance we can get that on the agenda?
I just wonder if the answers to this particular question reflect... not unlike what I was observing earlier, and maybe I'm wrong, a kind of a cultivated optimism that we're reluctant to acknowledge that things are bad. And so we're going to say, oh no, things are, it's the springtime of evangelization. Things are getting better.
Yeah.
And the data, the evidence isn't there.
No. Could I give you an example of that in our secular life? That many people,
we call it the golden years when we're about to die. Is that what you were going to say?
No. That there's many people, despite the fact that there are thousands of nuclear and thermonuclear weapons on the planet, who think that's never going to happen. What planet are you living on? That's definitely going to happen. If we don't get rid of them or do something, there's never been a weapon that just sat around for hundreds of years and nobody used it. It's going to happen. You have to wake up to the fact that there's really bad things in this world and we're not getting away from them.
I think that we in America are distracted by still the level of material comfort that all of us enjoy, and we equate in our subconscious, or maybe, you know, if you're a disciple of the Acton Institute, then you equate in your conscience material success and prosperity and comfort with, you know, things are great.
Yeah, but the Acton Institute, but
what's that?
I was a good dig at the Acton Institute, but that's right. There's these maniacs who write articles who say things have never been better. What are you talking about?
You have a choice of so many different kinds of minivans, Si.
It's true that things have never been better when you go to the emergency room, and that's not nothing. That's important, but that is not the health of a civilization. That is not something that's going to mean that we're still going to be here 200 years from now.
Yeah. I was reminded of today's first reading, Genesis 13. It's about Abraham and Lot. And Lot has a lot of stuff. And we're told Lot, who went with Abraham, also had flocks and herds and tents. So the land could not support them if they stayed together. Their possessions were so great that they could not dwell together. And then it says, Yeah, well, just that line, actually.
Isn't that a beautiful
line?
Yeah,
their possessions were so great they could not dwell. Exactly.
Yeah.
That here are the things they thought would make them happy. And it leads them to broken family. And it leads Lot into this weird lifestyle in Sodom and Gomorrah, where he's not personally affected, but he's gone into the city and he's surrounded by this toxic culture.
And his wife, Salty.
I see what you did there. Yeah. And so what I take from that is that we're not so different. And look, and that's with Abraham being a good guy.
Yeah.
Abraham's our father in faith. Good. That we are not immune from this lie that this will be the thing that keeps us happy. This is what keeps us together. It breaks his family apart. It nearly gets Lot killed. It gets his wife killed. And it just leads to the downfall in a real way of the good thing they have going. And so we can become too complacent. You were talking about the church in Germany. And I think we see this pattern over and over and over again, that we can become comfortable and complacent. And then you look at places where the church is poor and it's often doing great.
I want to say, in addition to comfort and comfortable and complacent, anesthetized.
Yes.
I mean, whether
quite intentionally.
You get home and flip on Netflix. Why? To anesthetize yourself.
Yes.
That is why you do it.
It's like that joke about the people who watch Netflix, but they never watch a show. They just scroll from show to show for hours.
Yep.
You're paralyzed by the amount of entertainment. And so you never actually are entertained.
I scroll through the Google News or Doom Scroll or whatever it is. So I don't have to have that moment when I am being quiet and thinking about the state of my interior life.
I got to do the last three questions.
I got to tell you a Pieper quote before you do, though.
Okay.
He says, a break in one's work, whether of an hour or a day or a week, is still part of the world of work. It is a link in the chain of utilitarian functions. The pause is made for the sake of work. And in order to work, and a man is not only refreshed from work, but for work.
Oh, that is leisure? Brutal. That is brutal. And that's the modern world. That's the world we live in. Yeah. Right. It's like what you always say about the modern world can't understand a woman religious because it always has to give
she's
her a job
practical.
Or a function. There's no practical use for her.
Not practical.
Not just the modern world. Prays. I mean, the bishops, when women religious came over, there were droves of contemplative women religious who came to the U.S. and said, well, you're going into the school now.
Yes.
And we don't care the vows you've made. And
there's nobody more utilitarian than a Catholic bishop.
Unfortunately, that was often the case. I mean, this is the 19th century. It's easy to have this kind of nostalgic once upon a time vision, but that was not good for those women or for the students they were teaching, frankly.
No.
No, that's right. All right. The last three are rates. We asked people to rate the leadership of Pope Francis, rate the leadership of the Catholic bishops, and rate the work of Catholic media.
You're going to get us an apostolic visitation if you're not careful.
No, I'm not. It's not all bad. You just assume it's all bad news. It's not all bad news. But I'll tell you what. Let's take a quick break. We'll just do those three on the last segment of the flannel panel. Right back after this.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
In Morse code, the sequence SOS is a distress call. It's been said that it stands for Save Our Souls. Well, right now our world is in big trouble, and we're putting out an SOS call for help. Will you answer that call? St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, has hundreds of teams who share the good news with souls who don't know Jesus. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to get involved.
EWTN offers listeners and viewers the daily readings to enable you to accompany the Mass of the day. Our Catholic daily readings include the readings of the day, along with online videos. It's a great resource for all who desire to live a life of faith that is pleasing to our Lord. Visit EWTN.com and click Catholicism. EWTN, the Global Catholic Network.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. Chris Check, Joe Heschmeyer, Cy Kellett, that's us. We're the flannel panel. And we all wear flannel and we talk about the news of the world from a Catholic perspective. And
it's a Queen album.
Oh, yeah. That's
news
right.
Of the
news
world.
Of the world. That's a scary cover on that album. Yeah. Oh, it's so scary. Look it up, Joe. It's scary.
It used to
frighten me as a child. Okay, so we have lots of lovely people who call this show. And among the loveliest is a young lady who
lives. She's in the top two of the loveliest.
She's the top two of the, well, the best heart and sharpest minds that call us is Ava in Ontario, California. She lives in Ontario, California. And we really like her a lot. And wait, excuse me? Not Ontario, California?
Ontario, Canada?
Oh, she lives in Ontario, Canada. That's right. My mistake. She lives in Ontario, Canada.
Which is it?
My bad. No.
Because if it's Ontario, California, you should come visit us, Ava. You're not very far away.
No, she lives in Ontario, Canada. Oh, okay. I was just teasing her because I messed her up a couple times on that. And her lovely father, Stephen, who I think is a gem of a guy because he called us to tell us today, Ava turns 16. Oh, so glory. The flannel panel would like to wish Ava a happy birthday and just tell you, we love it when you call, Ava. Thank you.
Ava, on your 16th birthday, did your parents get you like a stingray or something or a Mustang?
They got her a happy birthday for the flannel panel.
A big fast car.
Yes, right.
Right, for your 16th birthday.
We're just talking about material possessions are the key to happiness.
Ava, I want you to stand next to that Mustang that your parents got you and take a selfie and post it on your Instapin.
Because that's what life is about,
on your
Ava.
Instapin.
Yeah, I'm genuinely impressed. You know the word selfie.
Tell you what, you come to Rome with us and I'll take a selfie with you.
Did you want to say anything?
No.
Didn't want to say happy birthday to Ava?
Happy birthday.
Did you already say
happy birthday? I was the one who told you to tell her happy birthday.
Yes,
I feel like I was behind the scenes pushing for your birthday greetings, Ava.
Right, Ava. And you know what? You have
I was going to let them cloud themselves in glory.
When you call, you have that spirit of charity and your questions are always clear. And Chris always stresses to us when you're on the radio, clarity and charity. And so you have exemplified those, Ava.
Ava, tell your parents you want them to send you to the Catholic Answers Conference for your birthday.
In your new Mustang.
CatholicAnswersConference.com.
So she lives in Canada, is what you're saying.
Enjoy the health care, Ava.
All the money you were going to spend on hospitals, you can send yourself to Rome.
We had a Canadian priest who's actually from North Carolina.
Oh, Father Michael
was here.
Same
mass
today.
For us today here, yeah. Off the Holy Chapel.
I don't know your geography, but I think that's part of the U.S.
No, he's in Canada now.
He's with the Oratory in Toronto. Great priest, Father Michael Eads.
All right. So what do you think our listeners thought about the leadership of Pope Francis? How would you rate the leadership of Pope Francis? Happy with it? Confused by it? Unhappy with it? Mixed? What do you think? Got to be kind of quick on these.
Okay.
We're running
I'm going to say confused by it, but there might be a mix where it's confused and angry.
Okay. The mix is confused and angry. All right. What do you think?
It's confusing. Of course it is.
All right. This was about feelings, and the smallest group said happy with it, 16%. The second smallest group said unhappy with it, and that was 21%. And the next group was confused at 28%, and most people gave Pope Francis mixed reviews at 35%. I should really have put explain your answer on this one. It would have been nice to have more data on this. I didn't realize that.
There are times where he says brilliant things, like especially his homilies.
Wonderful things.
And so there are times where I'm very confused by something he said. There's times where I'm frustrated by it. There are times where I'm really moved and wowed by it. So I think mixed is it's fair, frankly.
Almost every pope should get a mix.
Yeah, yeah, it's true.
There's a few that you...
Read the passages in Laudato Si on technology.
Yeah, they're very superb. Good. They're very superb. Good.
You can get it online.
Okay. How would you rate the leadership of the Catholic bishops? I know we have some Catholic bishops listening. Here is your leadership being rated. Are you happy with it? Are you confused by it? Are you unhappy with it? Or do you feel mixed? What do you think our listeners will say?
I don't think it's a monolith. I mean, I guess the USCCB is kind of a monolith, but I'm very impressed with the leadership of Archbishop Salvatore Corleone in San Francisco. That's for darn sure.
Yeah, there are a lot of good bishops.
Bishop I'm reminded of the fact that Springfield, Illinois.
Americans regularly say Congress is terrible and then reelect their own congressman.
Yeah.
And right. So when you're talking about a broad, faceless organization, it's easy to be negative on it. When you think about the particular characters, especially the ones you know well, they're often better than the sort of stereotype. So I imagine people, when surveyed, would say negative things about the bishops, but I actually think that's probably a little harsher than
I would. I would say mostly negative things about the bishops, but it has not so much to do with the bishops as the fact that I think their job is impossible. And I think most of them are proving that. And the I think the job is impossible because dioceses are too big. I just don't think we should have dioceses as big as they are.
I literally was emailing a guy about that today. He was saying,
was it the Pope? Because that's who you need to email no, about. No, he that. Was. All right, there's nobody that could do anything about it except the Pope.
I wasn't trying to fix it. He was writing to me saying, I read Pope Peter and the need for a bishop in the diocese. And in my diocese, I don't ever see my bishop. Yeah. And I said, yeah, in the early church, these dioceses were a lot smaller. Yeah. And so a lot of the thing that people are annoyed by and frustrated by is American dioceses historically have been giant, even compared to European ones, certainly compared to the early church.
Right.
Because these were frontiers and this was a Protestant country. So you didn't have a huge Catholic population, but now you do, and yeah. you need a small diocese.
Yeah. I refer people to either today or yesterday's pillar. We are at we're about to see in 23, 24, and 25, more bishops coming of age since Pope Paul VI.
Coming of retirement.
They're
being they bar mitzvah now. Or something.
Paul VI instituted the 75-year mandatory retirement. That's a fairly new thing. Interestingly, not for the Bishop of Rome,
yes.
but for everyone else.
Yeah.
In any case, we're more than ever at retirement age than in the history of the church since that.
So that's going to be an interesting time. That's going to be
well,
a big
and
shift.
There are already vacancies in the United States, and the nuncio is having trouble filling them. And
really?
Yes, and I don't have the exact number, but it's got to be close to 15 or 20.
Oh, if there were smaller dioceses, frankly, as paradoxical as it
more,
is, it'd be easier to fill.
They would.
It's an overwhelming job. Who would want to be in charge of?
There are people who are saying no.
Right. Oh, of course.
Right.
Yeah.
But if it was because. A lot of priests would be happy to be pastor of their church. They would not be happy to be bishop of their diocese if they know what.
Let me just say something too. If you're a very fine priest and you don't have any kind of criminal record that's going to come out later, try not to say no. If when the Pope calls you, it's hard the life of a bishop, I'm sure. But try not to say no. Try to say yes. All right. Here's what our listeners said. Confused by the leadership of the bishops, 13.5%. Happy with it. 15%, unhappy with it, 22%, and mixed, 50%.
Okay, you know, this kind of tracks with that survey that Catholic University did of clergy,
yes.
which actually is even a little more frightening than the Catholic Radio.
They really don't like their bishops, a lot of them.
Well, the question was, do you regard your bishop as a father?
Yeah.
Do you think he would have your back? And we're talking very low percentages answered in the affirmative.
Yeah.
If I were an ordinary, that would give me pause because the one thing a bishop is supposed to do is be a father to his clergy.
Right.
Number one thing.
Yeah. I mean, Archbishop Naumann regularly says that his two legacies will be the churches he builds and the men he ordains.
Yep.
And that is a good, clear-sighted mission where he's not getting bogged down in secondary and tertiary things.
Say that man has a problem. You know, he falls. He has an addiction problem. The bishop really is to be his father and to help, not just to abandon him and give him a one strike or something like that.
I mean, you may have to pull him out of ministry forever, but you can still be a father to him.
Right. Yeah. Amen. But it would be much easier if he knew him.
Right.
And a lot of these bishops, it's not their fault. I'm not saying that the Archbishop of Chicago or New York City or something, that it's their fault that they don't know their priest, but they should not be leading local churches that are bigger than the entire church that the first 10 popes ruled over.
Yeah.
And that's the case. I mean, some of these have more Catholics in them than the entire early church had in it for its first 200 years.
True.
All right. How would you rate the work of Catholic media? We come to the nub now. How would you rate the work of Catholic media?
Is flawless an option?
Flawless was not one. See, this is where I should have consulted you before I did this, Joe. Happy
Top
with it.
Two best media.
Happy with it, confused by it, unhappy with it, mixed. First of all, I want to know what you would say. What do you think?
I would absolutely say mixed. There's a huge, I mean, when we say Catholic media,
that's what
everything from us to National Catholic Register, National Catholic Reporter, a bunch of YouTube personalities.
Right.
To Taylor Marshall and all the podcasters and all that.
I couldn't imagine one well-functioning person being happy with all of that because those different parts are often at war with one another.
Yeah.
And so I could see you saying everything is bad. I couldn't imagine a person who's surveying the whole scene and saying, yeah, this looks good.
I keep bringing up the pillar, and they have not paid for this ad time. Oh, I should probably send them a bill. But I do think this is a significant development in Catholic media. Yeah. The that thing is now a year old, maybe more.
I think more than a year old.
More than a year old. And the quality of journalism prior to the pillar was not available in the English language.
That's true.
That those guys are providing. So in that sense, I think and by the way, the even-handedness of it, the lack of polemics, and the love of Jesus Christ that informs the work that they do.
Yeah, they're trying to do real good reporting and trying to just say
for the good of the church. Facts.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. It's something that is badly needed, especially with was it. Not Catholic News Agency. Was it Catholic? Which was the USCCB owned one that is maybe CNS, Catholic News Service.
Oh, that's the one out of business.
So, yeah. Right. And so even more it's needed now. Well, by the way, I'm glad you didn't make a Lot's Wife joke about Pillar.
Oh, the Pillar. I could have made a Lot's Wife joke.
But just
about
a second.
That.
Hasn't OSV purchased?
Oh, maybe they have. I get them confused. So,
I think so.
Yeah. There was certainly at least a period where there were fewer Catholic news outlets trying to just do objective news and not trying to give an angle.
Yeah. I can tell you 30 years in Catholic media as my main job, and the landscape is much more interesting today than it was 30 years ago.
Agreed.
You can get much better work for a whole variety of reasons, you know, because there's so many people involved in it now, but also much worse stuff. Stuff that's really damaging, stuff where you see wolves in sheep's clothing, like that, where people coming off as more Catholic than anybody. And what they're really doing is, to borrow Chris's term, disedifying people and damaging their faith.
Some of this is universal, if I may. Todd Aglialoro, our editor here.
No, he's not a bad guy.
No, he's let's just say he has these exact same critiques about cars. He said there used to be 3.5 car magazines. And now there's a million YouTube channels, and some of them are very good and some of them are horrible. Yeah. And it allows more room for mediocrity. I know nothing about cars, but it does seem
good for you, Joe.
This is, I know the color usually. But it does seem like this is partly just a reflection of the media landscape in general.
I'm going to say the kinds of things that interest me are more readily and widely available.
Yes.
That's right. Than ever. Right.
Guys like Larry Chapp, guys like the folks at New Polity magazine, The Lamp is a brilliant new Catholic magazine.
But then there's things that have been around for a long time. Like I really enjoy the National Catholic Register. I think they're doing very, very good work.
And have been for a long time.
It's been a long time that they've been doing very good. And even the stuff that I don't agree with, like often I will not agree with much that's in the National Catholic Reporter, but they have done some very fine reporting that was really important. And I think what a lot of other Catholic media outlets learned from them was there comes a time when you have to be critical. You have to say this Vost Estes, you know, complaint it has to be reported. It can't just be like glossed. So I do think that there's
I'm sad about the loss of local Catholic media.
Though that's definitely happened.
Yeah.
How would you rate the work of Catholic media? The lowest was unhappy with it.
Good.
At 2.67%. Confused by it was next at 3%. Mixed was 28%. And happy with it was 66.42%. And I think that's just people being nice to us.
I think if you were to send out a question that says, do you like answering surveys? You'd probably also get a very high percentage. But that might be a methodological error.
Yeah, right. All right, hey, the Catholic Answers Flannel Panel, that's us. We're going to Rome November 9th through the 18th. We'd really love it if you'd come. Go to CatholicAnswersPilgrimage.com. There are spots left, but we decided to do this flash sale and just get it done. And we feel like this will do it. So you got till July 11th to get the flash sale price. It's $300 off whatever you see as the advertised price of whether you include airfare or whether you go with the no airfare option. Just take $300 off that, and that's what you get if you are signed up by July 11th. CatholicAnswersPilgrimage.com. Joe will give talks. Chris is one of the most extraordinary tour guides that you will ever. It's just fun to go to Rome with Chris. And Chris also has this other thing where he insists on really good food and really good wine.
And so I will bring his flannels.
And I'm going to bring my flannels with me. If not, I'll buy some of those legendary Italian flannels.
Flanello.
Flanello. Flanello, por favor. Joe Heschmeyer, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Congratulations on your magnificent new book, The Eucharist is Really Jesus, How Christ's Body and Blood Are the Key to Everything We Believe. You're supposed to say thank you.
Yes, thank you. I was grabbing the book to hold up to satisfy the
Chris
video.
Chris Check, folks. President of Catholic Answers, thank you. Another 6 months that you did not fire me. I'm deeply grateful.
You guys are great, and I give thanks and praise to God that you're here on the Catholic Answers team.
Thank you. Thank you very much. That does it for us. We'll see you tomorrow, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.